and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, January 14th, 2018. This episode's late. Well, I mean, if you're listening afterwards, you won't be able to tell. I was supposed to post this morning, and I totally forgot to record it. So here it is, top of the pile for January 14th, 2019. Of course, top of the pile being the episode of the week in which I talk about some of my favorite books from last New Comic Book Day. And boy, there's some good ones this week. I can't wait to dive into these. I've got one DC, two Marvel, two Image, and one IDW. Is that the first IDW book? Maybe. I don't know. Oh, wait. It's not IDW. It's Dynamite. Just kidding. Ha-ha! Let's kick off with that one. Turok number one. Written by Ron Mars. Art by Roberto Castro. Colors by Salvatore Atala. And letters by Troy Pateri. And, of course, I'm a huge Turok fan. I've loved Turok for a long time. Mostly because, of course, I'm a big Valiant fan. Still am, by the way. So don't let anyone fool you. I still love Valiant. But back in the day, you know, Valiant had all these characters, right? They had Magnus and Turok and everybody else. And it was awesome. And over the years, Dynamite's done a few different things with Turok. I actually enjoyed the last quote-unquote reboot that they did with Turok. It was well done. I think that was Phil Hester, right? And I can't remember the name of the book. It wasn't called Turok, but it was good. It was great. And I know Fred Van Lente did a Turok. I really enjoyed that run as well. I don't think the character gets enough recognition for how awesome it is. And I want to talk briefly about this new one, because we haven't seen Turok in, a year or so probably. And I really like the way that this kicks off. In many ways, this book was kind of a palate cleanser for me. It is written by Ron Mars, so there's not, this is going to sound really bad when I say it. But it's not a very wordy comic. And Ron Mars is not a very wordy person when he writes his comics, and I like that. And this just felt like a really good, fun comic, taking us back to kind of the basics of Turok. And I wonder if some ways this is kind of an origin story. Maybe it is. The plot is pretty straightforward. It kicks off in Colorado in 1873, so Wild West times. And Andor is captured by, I want to say U.S. military, if I remember correctly. The U.S. military used to have these, like, blue and gray suits, which are kind of inspired, I guess, by the garb that was worn during the Civil War. But that's kind of what it looks like. They look like soldiers, U.S. soldiers. I know I've heard some people talk about this book and saying that they thought they were cowboys. I don't think they're cowboys at all. I think they're U.S. military. But anyways, these guys are going after Andor, and they're looking for Turok as well. They do capture Andor, who's Turok's younger brother. And, of course, Turok is there the whole time. And actually, there's some really cool panels where you see, like, his feet moving, right? I love that kind of thing. It's almost like a horror trope, right? Where you only see, like, part of the monster. And that's the way that Turok's portrayed until you do see him. And he's a total badass, and I love that. Because Turok should be, right? And I think this is a good time for this comic. With Conan just having launched 2 weeks ago, I guess now. I think the time might be right for a book like this. It's not quite Conan, right? But it does have some similarities in some respects, I guess. And we'll see where Ron Mars and crew take this book. But I really like this one. It's a very straightforward story. Much of it just has these military guys with Andor, and then, you know, their showdown with Turok. And Turok does end up getting his brother back, and they're riding off into the desert. And this portal opens up, and they're like, well, these guys are following us. Let's just jump into the portal. And they do, and of course they end up in the lost world, the lost land, and there's dinosaurs. Matter of fact, that's kind of how they end up escaping. One of the raptors jumps out of the portal and starts attacking these military guys. And they're like, what the hell kind of lizard is this? And I like that. It was a little humorous. Not a whole lot of meat in this book, but let me tell you, it was really, really fun. I really look forward to reading the next issue of this one. I'm going to give Turok number 1 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I know some people might rate it a little bit lower because really not a whole lot happens. But you know what? It's fine. It's a first issue. How much do you want in a first issue? You got the whole damn premise. And you got Turok shooting arrows. So, I mean, it's perfect. I love this book. Can't wait for the next one. Let's go to another one that's kind of come back that I really, really had a good time reading. And that's Criminal number 1. This is written, of course, by Ed Brubaker with art by Sean Phillips and colors by Sean's son, Jacob Phillips. Now, of course, Criminal, a long-running series by Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I haven't read all the volumes, but I have read, I think, the first 3, so I'm not completely caught up with the story, but I do plan on catching up at some point. And the good thing about this one is you don't really need to know anything about the previous story. I think that's probably the case for most of these criminal books. I think as comic book readers, sometimes we get into this really terrible habit where we don't want to pick up a book on issue like 10 or 20 or 50 or 500 or whatever it is, right? And the same kind of goes for miniseries. Sometimes you may not want to pick up a Criminal Volume 4 if you haven't read 1, 2, and 3. And that may be part of the reason why this is just called Criminal. They haven't really attached the volume to it. And in fact, I read some of the back matter on this. The back matter is really interesting. It's kind of a letter by Brubaker talking about how they came about doing this criminal book, the history of the book, the stuff that they were doing before, how he and Sean came together to create this, and of course some of the other stuff that they've done, because they've done a lot of books together. But somehow they just wanted to come back to this criminal world. And in the second part of the back matter, there's a brief recap of every volume of Criminal. And I recommend maybe reading some of that before actually reading the comic, even though there's very little impact. But one thing that I thought was pretty interesting in the back matter was when they are talking about some of these other books and how My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies is kind of set in this world. And I didn't get a chance to talk about that book, and maybe at some point I'll do a book club or something on that particular book, but it was really interesting. And the fact that it takes place in this world, Brubaker actually calls it like volume 8 or book 8 of Criminal. And I can kind of see that when he says it, but not really. I don't know. I have to think about that a little bit more, but I do recommend you pick that one up. In terms of Criminal itself, I mean, like I said, I've enjoyed this book, what I've read of it before, the first couple of volumes. And it's nice to be back in this world, and I'm going to tell you why. There's very few comic book publishers or even indie creators that are doing this kind of book. It is very much one of those like throwback noir detective type stories, and there are, you know, a few that pop in every so often, but I don't think any are as hard-hitting and as gritty and kind of really get that tone as well as Criminal does. And because of that, this book was just fantastic. There's a couple different plot lines going on. As the book kicks off, we have Teague's son is kind of the main character in the beginning of the story. You see him going to his quote-unquote grandfather's house. Spoiler alert, there's a reason why it's in quotes. He goes and he's talking to his grandfather about getting dinner. And his grandfather's obviously got Alzheimer's. So he's like, oh, is your mom making dinner? Oh, what are you doing here? Oh, I didn't know you were there. Like, how have you been? So very obviously has some mental issues. And the kid's taking advantage of it because, in fact, he's not the guy's grandson. He has broken into the home to steal this diamond that the guy had actually stolen himself when he was a much younger guy, because the guy used to be in the mob. And the reason he steals it is to bail his dad out, Teague, who has appeared in this series before. And matter of fact, we've saw one of Teague's other kids show up in previous volumes of Criminal. And then the story goes on, because now Teague has to find a way to not only get the diamond back, but repay the crime family for this transgression. And I think they want like 30 grand in like 2 weeks. And I mean, the guy just got out of jail, right? How's he going to do that? So he's looking for a way to get a big score and pay them back. And there's a couple setups that are really interesting towards the end of the issue that I'm going to kind of spoil anyway. So if you plan on reading this, maybe fast forward 2 or 3 minutes on the podcast. But, you know, he's like, how am I going to get this money back? And as all this is happening, he goes to see one of his best friends from before, Arvin, who he and Arvin used to do a lot of break-ins and get a lot of money. And he goes to see him, and apparently Arvin had died. So he talks to his ex, and they end up sleeping together. He goes to the funeral, and then while going to the wake, you know, there's some mob guys in there talking, and they're talking about how, like, yeah, you know, we sent Arvin to do this one job, and we said, hey, if you do it really quickly, I'll give you 100 grand instead of 40 grand. And of course, Teague hears this, and he's like, wait a second, 100 grand? He told me we got paid 40 grand. So he gets super pissed off. There's a big brawl at the wake of this poor guy. And he goes to the guy's grave and, you know, starts yelling at the graveside and kicking the tombstone. And then he's like, wait, he died in his car doing a stakeout. Let me go see what the stakeout's about. And he goes and he sees that there's these migrant workers waiting for work, and there's pickups that are coming in, and they're picking up guys and dropping them off and paying them cash, like a week's worth of pay in cash. So he's like, okay, I'm going to get some guys together and just rob these guys. But there's a couple of words in there about how, kind of foreshadowing, that Teague is not going to survive this volume of the book. And I thought that was kind of interesting and something that we don't normally see in comics, right? But it does happen quite a bit in these noir type stories. So I really enjoyed it, and the art's fantastic. If you, if you're tired of Cape and Cowls and you want something very different and extremely well written, definitely give this one a shot. And don't worry about picking up old stuff. I think Criminal Number One in itself is good enough to pick the story up. This book is going to be a 5 out of 5. Almost pick of the week, by the way. I think there's only one book that will top it. Let's go to the next one and find out. Over at Marvel, Captain Marvel Number One. Written by Kelly Thompson, whom I adore. I think she's fantastic. Art by Carmen Carnero. Colors by Tamara Von Villain. And letters by Clinton Cowles. And, this is quite an interesting book. It's been a while since I've read something with Carol Danvers. So I don't remember anything that happened to her in Civil War, what the falling out between her and Tony was, what the deal was with her and Rhodey. I vaguely remember them maybe dating, but I don't know. It's been so long. And the good thing about this book is that it definitely talks about all that stuff. It definitely talks about all that stuff. So as the book kicks off, Carol is fighting a Kraken with Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman, and they're duking it out, and, you know, they're talking about how to defeat this guy, and in the meanwhile doing a little banter because, of course, they're friends, and how Jessica's happy that Carol's not in space anymore and that she's back on Earth, this, that, and the other. And that's irritated a little bit more at the end of the fight when Carol's trying to figure out what the hell to do with this giant monster that they just defeated. And that's when Tony shows up with a bunch of Iron Man armors. And he's like, you know, I'll get rid of it for you. Just, why don't you come see me and see if you can come back to the Avengers? And she's like, yeah, I don't want to do that. He's like, look, just come see me. We'll chat and, you know, we'll figure it out. So he goes and tries to enlist her in the Avengers. And the way that whole thing is done is actually pretty interesting. He seemed much douchier than Tony Stark that I've seen in other books. And I was really okay with that. Matter of fact, one of the main things that he tries to do is talk to Carol about it as kind of a marketing technique, right? Because he's like, you know, you were in space and this, that, and the other. You were fighting for your family. Like, there's a great marketing angle for that. Like, the story's very relatable. He's like, I want you to join, but, you know, you got to be interviewed. And she's like, interviewed? And, you know, Tony's hired this girl for, I think it was Miss Marvel Magazine or something like that, maybe Marvel Magazine, and to interview for this magazine. Just to kind of get the story out and get some good marketing in. And I thought that's so weird, right? To have the Avengers do this kind of PR thing. And I think we've seen that kind of thing before, but I don't remember it being done this particular way. And I didn't mind it at all. Of course, while this is happening, you know, Tony's is trying to get her to train this new recruit, Hazmat, who is a member of the Avengers Academy. And Hazmat absolutely hates Tony, so of course, she and Carol get along as a result of that. And Rhodey pops in, so they start talking and maybe rekindling that romance. They go and have dinner at this place, this restaurant, and she gets attacked by Nuclear Man. And Nuclear Man is one of these very macho guys, you know, like women are below him. So they have an interesting back and forth. He ends up kidnapping the girl that's supposed to interview Captain Marvel, and she goes after him in this portal and ends up in some alternate dimension, maybe, like a magic realm. And the Avengers are kind of stuck there trying to figure out what the hell to do, right? Cap's there and Tony and Thor, and they're like, well, do we go after her? We don't even know where she's at. And the last page was pretty cool. I don't want to spoil that. But overall, I thought it was good. It was an interesting first issue. Again, this is one of those things where I often feel like I'm reading a Marvel book and really enjoying it, but I think to myself, why am I liking this? Because I'm not at all the target audience for this book. Matter of fact, there's another book that I'll talk about in a little bit that kind of was the same kind of thing, right? And, but I felt like that a lot lately with these Marvel books. I was talking about Champions, I guess last week, maybe the week before. I felt kind of the same way, but I find myself really enjoying them, and I don't know what it is about them. But they just feel very comic booky and very fun. And this was kind of that as well. I do look forward to seeing where they take this book. I hope that the rest of the series is not like this one. I think it's a great first issue, but it's not something that I would want to see if I keep coming back to this book. So for now, I'm a little reserved about coming back, but I do love Kelly Thompson. I think she's a fantastic writer, and I like where this book is going, so we'll see. We'll see. You know, she's trying to bring Captain Marvel back into the Marvel Universe. Of course, makes perfect sense because the movie's coming out in, what, 2 months? 2 or 3 months? So we'll see how that goes. But overall, really enjoy this one. 4 out of 5 on Captain Marvel number 1. Let's talk about Die number 2. This is a book that I read the first issue of, and I wanted to talk about it, but I was like, eh, I'm going to hold off a little bit because I'm not quite sure. But now that I've read the second one, I do want to talk about it because I think it's really interesting. In fact, so interesting that I do plan on continuing it, and it's not by a writer that I generally follow. Written by Kieran Gillen, with art by Stephanie Hans and letters by Clayton Cowles. And I was never a big fan of Wicked and Divine. I know it's like a critically acclaimed book, a lot of people love it. It just never was a thing for me. I think maybe it went a little too far with some things. And this one has some similarities to Wicked and Divine, but it feels like the story is much more well thought out and doesn't try to throw too many things in your face, although there is a lot going on. So do not just go into issue 2 blind. You do need a lot of backstory from the first issue. But overall, I really enjoyed it. And the basic premise is that in 91, there's 6 teenagers. They're playing this like D&D type game, Dungeons and Dragons, and they get sucked into the world they've created, kind of like Jumanji. And things kind of don't go very well. Only 5 come out of it alive. And I think one of them is missing an arm. So there's 1 left over in this magical realm. And now, you know, how old? 27 years later? This 6th player wants him to come back into the world because there's some stuff going on in this fantasy realm. And so that was the premise of the first one. And it was good. But it left me wanting a little bit more. And I didn't know what that more was. And I think with the second issue, I kind of got that more, right? Because in the second issue, we are back in this magical realm, and I'm not a D&D guy. I'm not a D&D guy at all. I've played D&D 1 time in my life. I know some of you are gasping and throwing your headphones at whatever. Don't hurt anybody. Please just keep your headphones in your ears. But it's just never been my thing. I'm interested in plenty of nerdy things, but D&D was not one of those things. I do love D&D-inspired stuff, though, right? Like, I like D&D-inspired movies. I like other games that take the D&D class structure and the magical system of D&D a little bit, but do something completely different with it. And that's been done a million times, both in the U.S. market with European comics and movies and TV, same with manga and anime. But for some reason, like, this is really working for me. I think Kieran Gillen is changing what I normally expect D&D to be, and the take on some of these tropey classes, right, like the warrior class, for example. There's a guy in here, he's called the Grief Knight, right, that's his character. And, you know, these guys are older now, right? When they were playing this game, they were, whatever, 14, 15. Now they're in their 30s or 40s, and they have families and kids, and so they see the world very differently. And this one guy, for example, was the Grief Knight back then because he drew his power from sadness, right? He was probably like an emo kid, you know what I mean? I was kind of an emo kid, but not very sad. Anyways, now he's different. He's matured. He's grown up. He's serious. He's got a job. He's got family, wife, kids. And his life is not powered by grief. But one of the characters, fortunately, is kind of a magey type character and is able to manipulate his emotions so he can use his powers as the Grief Knight. And that kind of thing was cool. Same with one of the mage characters, maybe more like a healer. The way that she deals with magic is different as well. Because a lot of these magic type classes really have a hold in particular of like a certain element, right? This character can basically summon gods to fight with her. But these gods are not very nice, and the interaction between it was cool. It reminded me a little bit of like the early darkness stuff. Some of the stuff kind of went by the wayside later on, but really early, as we're getting to another character, how these little demons that Jackie Estacado has control of maybe have their own will about what they want to do. So even though ultimately they're supposed to do whatever the Darkness Force tells them to do, they have some kind of free will, so they might try to be a little sneaky about it, right? And it seems like that's kind of the way these god beings work as well. I don't know, I really enjoy this issue. There's definitely a lot more to unpack. We're still learning a lot about the story, but I'm really enjoying where this is going. And the art is beautiful. I know there were some issues that I had in the first issue, because this is a new artist to Sequential Comics. I think she's mostly done paintings and stuff before. So it's the first comic she's done, and the first sequential work that she's done. But it is beautiful, and I think with the second issue, she's getting a little better handle on things. So I look forward to this series. If you haven't picked up Die, then I recommend you check it out, especially if you're a fantasy fan. Die number 2 is going to be a 4 out of 5. Next up, over to DC Young Justice number 1. Yes, yes, I had to talk about this book. I have still not begun watching Young Justice on DC Universe. I just haven't had the time, and I will at some point. But I'm really glad that this book came out, because it was almost my pick of the week. It is not my pick of the week, but I really enjoyed it. Written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Patrick Gleason, colors by Alejandro Sanchez, and letters by DC Lettering. I don't know what that means. Do they have an AI at DC that's lettering their books now? Who knows? They should probably put the letterer's name in the credits. That's all I'm saying, guys. You do whatever you want. It's your show, but I really enjoy this. And this is, of course, the first book in this new Wonder Comics line that Brian Michael Bendis is heading. It is it's targeted towards a younger demographic, but just because it's a teen book, YA book, that's the term, right? YA. Just because it's a YA book, don't think of these as books that you are too old to read. Because, let's be serious, the majority of comic book readers are a little bit older. But this is definitely a book that you could probably read with your kids if they are interested in reading comics. And that's a good thing. But for those of us that are not teens and whose kids don't care too much about comics, I mean, sometimes they do, this might be up your alley, because I think what this does is something that DC has kind of shied away from. And this really feels at home in main continuity. And even though these are a separate imprint technically, these are all in continuity. And by the way, I gotta throw this in there because there was a preview at the end of this book for Naomi number 1. It's a new Bendis book. It's an African American teen who kinda has the powers of Superman apparently. And it is gorgeous. I don't know anything about this book, but boy did they pick a great artist for this book. I just, based on the preview panels alone, I think it'll be worth checking out. So put that on your pull list if you haven't, Naomi. But back to Young Justice. This book was awesome. The art by Patrick Gleason is incredible. Of course, that's to be said because it is Patrick Gleason. And I think the art does go a long way sometimes to make a comic even better. And, you know, ever since Bendis went over to DC, I've really gotten to love the guy quite a bit. There were things that I liked that he did over at Marvel, but overall I wasn't a huge Bendis fan. But man, at DC he is knocking it out of the park. The stuff he's doing on Superman is fantastic. This book is fantastic. The Batman stuff he's doing over at on the Walmart books I think is really good as well. And I mean, he's obviously spent a lot of time doing his research and really planning out what he wants to do with these books. My assumption is that this book will tie into Superman at some point. When the book opens up, we are in Gemworld, and you know the rulers of Gemworld decide to invade Earth because they want to meet up with Superman. They want a challenge, and so they want to meet up with Earth's champion, Superman, and Superman's nowhere to be found. I mean, these guys are causing a ruckus, destroying things to see if they can get Superman's attention. People are calling to Superman. Superman is not there. Why that is, I don't know. I'm sure that at some point we'll know exactly why. Maybe even tie that into Action and Superman itself. We'll see. But I really like that little aspect of it, because that's how you get to meet this new team, the new Young Justice. And I really like the team. There's a couple of new members, Ginny Hex being one of them. She is, of course, Jonah Hex's daughter. Teen Lantern, who has a terrible garbage name, and he knows it because he even makes fun of himself in this book. When the team is kind of gathering up to fight these Gemworld people, he's like, and Teen Lantern, oh, maybe I should get a better name, like something like that. So I really like a book that can poke fun of itself, and it works really well here. Of course, Impulse is in here, Bart Allen, and I know Bart's kind of showed up in Flash recently, but this feels like the Bart Allen I remember, right? He's fun and funny and just super wacky and out there and, like, has these abilities that he knows how to use but maybe can't control quite as well, and maybe they have some effect on the way he sees reality around them. I don't want to spoil how that's played out in the issue itself, but it was really, really good. Of course, we've got Tim Drake. Tim Drake back as Robin. God, Tim Drake, best Robin. Best Robin. Dick Grayson, best Batman. Tim Drake, best Robin. And really nice to see Tim wearing the Robin suit again. I know, you know, a lot of people were a little worried about Tim with this Rebirth stuff, and even before in New 52. He's not Red Robin anymore, so that's cool. I was never a big fan of that. He feels right as Robin. You know, some characters just feel right doing a particular thing, and Tim as Robin just feels right. I don't know how they're going to kind of play with some of the other Robins that are around, but we'll see. You know, like Damian, for example. Wonder Girl is here, so that was cool to see. I hadn't seen her in quite a while. Matter of fact, I don't think we've seen really any of these characters in quite a while. The ones that we know, right? Aside from Jenny and Teen Lantern. And Amethyst shows up, of course, at the end, and she's one of the Gemworld inhabitants, so she's going to be part of the team. And basically, the team is kind of thrown together quite by mistake, because, you know, Jenny's there, and these guys attack, and Jenny's trying to fight them off, and at the same time, she's, like, getting pulled over for speeding, and has an arsenal in the back of her pickup truck. That's when Tim Drake shows up, and, you know, he had just been chatting with Wonder Girl, so they get in on the fight. For some reason, Impulse is there in Metropolis, and he sees this whole thing, and he comes in, and Teen Lantern comes out of nowhere, and they're fighting these Gemworld guys, and finally they kind of defeat him. Not really. The Gemworld guys kind of say, we're going back to our homeworld. Let us know when you find Superman. And as this is happening, they kind of get teleported themselves into Gemworld. And Impulse just so happens to fight who? Connor Kent, Superboy. So that was cool, because when was the last time we saw Superboy? It's probably pre-New 52, I would say, right? It's been a long, long time. So very cool. One thing to note that I was a little confused about, if anyone has any ideas, then by all means let me know. But the inhabitants of Gemworld talk about 7 crises affecting Earth, and I was trying to figure out what those 7 crises were. I don't know if they're counting, like, heroes in crisis. I don't think that's really a crisis-type event, because they do explain what a crisis is, and to me it doesn't fit that, even though it's got crisis in the name. I know some people were talking about Dark Knight's Metal being one of these crises. I mean, maybe, I guess. Let me know what you think about these 7 crises. I thought that was kind of interesting. But, you know, it's Bendis, and I've grown to learn to trust in Bendis, I guess. So really, really fun issue. Fantastic art. Cool story. Great characterization. Really awesome to see these characters come back together. And I can't wait for the next one. So Young Justice, number 1. 5 out of 5. God, it's so good. It was really good. Almost as good as the pick of the week, which will surprise 100% of anyone listening to this show, and that is Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 1. Yep, I said it. Spider-Man book is the pick of the week. Everybody clap. Written by Tom Taylor, art by Juan Cabal, colors by Nolan Woodard, letters by Travis Lenham. And before I get to kind of the basis of the story, I will say this. There are plenty of Spider-Man books out on the shelves right now. Miles Morales is really good too, by the way. Maybe my 2nd favorite Spider-Man book out right now. But for some reason, the main Spider-Man book just did not hit it for me. I think there were some things in there that felt Spider-Man to me, some that did not. I'm not the biggest Spider-Man fan, so I'm not an authority on this. But if you are a Spider-Man fan, I want to know what your thoughts are on all these Spider books, which one you like best and why, and your opinion on this one. Because to me, this particular book feels like old school Spider-Man, you know, like Ditko Spider-Man. And that Spider-Man is really fun. You know, there's going to be some serious moments for sure. But that Spider-Man is fun. That Peter is fun. He's kind of aloof. He's very dedicated to being Spider-Man and to his family and his friends and people around him. And that is exactly what this book is about. That's why it is called Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Why these other Peter Parkers can't be this Peter Parker, I don't know, but I love this Peter Parker. I love him. He's kind of an F-up. I try not to cuss on this podcast. Sometimes it happens. He's kind of an F-up. He's, of course, not living with Aunt May. He's living in the city with some roommates. One of his roommates is a supervillain, but kind of a third tier, right? So he's kind of okay with the guy living there, I guess. And, of course, the guy doesn't know he's Peter Parker's Spider-Man. But, you know, it's got that, like, fun feeling. The landlord of the building is kind of cool. She's this old woman who's very jokey and kind of dirty at the same time. I don't want to spoil some of the jokes, but I thought that was really good. The book is just fun, right? And I think to me, that's one thing that's kind of been missing from some of these Spider-Man books, where, you know, you get to see the Rogues Gallery and, you know, the relationship aspect of it and things. But this just feels like what Spider-Man should be, right? Where he's joking the entire time he's fighting the bad guys until, like, something happens to Aunt May or Mary Jane or whatever. And then he's, like, sad, but that's when he gets serious and, you know, goes after the bad guy or whatever. This just, it felt right to me. It felt so good to read this book. And I really enjoyed it as a result. There's a couple stories kind of going on in here. You know, one is how Peter is dealing with both his personal life and his life as Spider-Man. And of course, they do mention the fact that he's kind of in disgrace with the world. If you wanted to learn more about that, you can read the first arc of the official Spider-Man book. But, even through that, like, he kind of doesn't care, right? He's just doing his thing and trying to make it out and make a living and really helping his neighbors. And that's kind of one of the things that gets him in trouble in this book. Maybe we'll see. But there's this girl living, I think, like two or three doors down from his apartment, and she never comes out of the apartment, right? So the landlady is like, hey, listen, do me a favor, like, go talk to her. You know, she'll want to talk to you because, you know, just tell her you know Spider-Man. Like, she loves Spider-Man. Tell her you know Spider-Man, and maybe you can get her to come out of her apartment, maybe go outside. She hasn't been outside in weeks. And so he goes and kind of coerces her into chatting. He's got apples, and, you know, he tells her, hey, I know Spider-Man. I take pictures of him. And she kind of tells him, like, she doesn't want to come out because she's afraid for her life. And she feels like there's somebody after her. And so, you know, he's like, listen, it'd be okay. Like, I'll come back. I'll check on you, whatever. And he goes to do some other stuff. When he comes back, the door's wide open. And there's a bunch of guys in there. They're getting ready to kidnap this girl. And he tries to start fighting them as, you know, Peter. And he gets knocked out. He gets knocked out. And when he wakes up, he's like, okay, now I need to figure out what the hell's going on. What kind of guy could just punch me in the face and knock me out for 30 minutes? And, you know, that's kind of where we'll pick up, I guess, in the next issue. There's a really cool backup story as well, with pencils by Marcella Ferreira, inks by Roberto Poggi, and colors by Jim Campbell, letters by Travel Sinanim as well, and written by Tom Taylor. And it is kind of heartbreaking. It is an Aunt May story. She doesn't die. You know, poor Aunt May. She gets killed all the time, right? She doesn't die, but it's really interesting what Tom is going after here. And I think if you're a Spider-Man fan, there are some notes in this backup story that, to me, are reminiscent of a very popular and famous Spider-Man story. If you got that, then let me know. If I'm wrong, then let me know. But really, really interesting. And a great parallel to the main story that's really fun. This backup is much sadder and dour in many respects. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, though. Woo, woo, woo. This was great. Great art, great story, really fun book. I think it hits all notes for me. 5 out of 5. Pick of the week, also. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. That's going to be it. That is the top of the pile for today. Thank you all for listening. Dustin will be on tomorrow doing the Comic Talk headlines, and I'll be back on Wednesday with a fantastic episode. My guest host on that will be Dewan Hammonds from the Collecting Valiant podcast. I love that guy. It was a lot of fun chatting with him. We're going to be doing some collecting stuff. So if you collect comics or want to collect comics, you might want to check that episode out. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to the show. Leave us a review. It helps. I haven't had a review in a couple of months, and I would love to have some more. If you want to get in touch with me, of course, the best place is Twitter at GeekBond. You can email yale@comictalk.today. I'll catch you on the next one.